This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Tactics. We appreciate you being a part of the program, whether you're joining us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, Periscope. However you're joining us this evening, we appreciate you being with us on this Wednesday afternoon, where speech isn't violence, tolerance isn't love, and disagreement isn't hate. That's what we are about here at Tactics, and, you know, it's not my fault, it's not by choice, but being a news person, it's pretty common that you wind up having to do negative news stories, because let's be honest, that's what most of the news is. And it's not that we tailor it that way, it's just typically that's the kind of stuff that makes news. We really have nothing but good news today. There's some things to be cautious about for sure, but this is going to be a really good news day. And so that's something that I'm really glad to be able to bring to you. And even though I typically stay in a certain lane and try to do not that much on Wednesday, try to stick to one story, I actually do have two stories today. We'll try to get through both of them very quickly. We're just going to kind of give you the raw details of what you need to know. And the first one I'm very pleased to announce, it turns out that Governor Kay Ivey, the governor of our great state of Alabama, her doctor has given her a very, very good report. You may remember a few months ago, she announced that they had found a spot on her lung and that it was lung cancer. It was something that was pretty serious. And of course, we were all very concerned for Governor Ivey and were praying for her. Well, today, the governor's office released a statement from her oncologist, Dr. Alex Whitley. And Dr. Whitley said, and this is a direct quote, "I consider Governor Ivey to be cured." So praise God, that is a really, really great report, great news for any of you, because Lord knows I don't always agree with Kay Ivey either. She and I have definitely had our differences, and I've been very public about that. But, I mean, when it comes to the fight against cancer, we're all on the same side. The vast majority, virtually every human being you'll ever run across the world over, we're all united in this fight against cancer. And so it is really, really great to see that happen for Governor Ivey. And as somebody who has been cancer-free now for about 2 years, in fact, my 2-year anniversary is coming up, I am really ecstatic to say, welcome to the club, Governor Ivey. It's great to have you here. Now, I do want to be very clear about something. And granted, I believe that I'm speaking for all cancers, but all cancers are different, and so I'm speaking more from my experience with testicular cancer, which, of course, regardless of what the transgender crowd says, Governor Ivey is not capable of having, so that's not really a thing with us. But as I understand it, cured is kind of a catch-all term, because what happens is you're declared cancer-free. In other words, they can't find a trace of the cancer in you, and then after that, you have to go a whole year to be considered in remission, which is the stage that I'm in right now. And after you've gone in remission, you have to go 4 more years in remission, so 5 years total from the day that you're declared cancer-free to be considered a cancer survivor. So we certainly hope that Governor Ivey reaches all of those big benchmarks, and we hope that the Lord decides to let her stay with us as long as possible, regardless of where we want her to wind up politically, or, you know, may not want her in the governorship anymore, like, honestly, I kind of do. But there's no question that I want her with us as long as possible, and this is a really, really good report from her. Now, the governor's office did release this statement as well. Quote, and this is Governor Ivey speaking herself. "Naturally, I want to thank the good Lord for his abundant grace in my healing. This is one more of the many blessings he has bestowed on my life. As I travel throughout Alabama, I have been reminded at every stop that Alabamians are the most thoughtful and loving people one will ever meet. I have been humbled by your support during my recovery, and it's my life's highest honor to serve you as governor." You know what, Governor? Wish you the best. My prayers are with you. Godspeed. Genuinely hope that everything goes well with that, and I'm really glad to hear that good report. There's really not a whole lot of opinion, not a lot of analysis, not a lot to say on that. So we're going to go ahead and move to some of the pressing news of the day. Props to Governor Ivey. I'm really glad to be able to start out the broadcast with that. But we do have to move on to, of course, the big news of the day. You remember yesterday, just before the show opened, we had breaking news that Iran had bombed the United States military installments in Iraq. We know that they hit an air base, they hit another military facility in Iraq, and it turns out they had also shot missiles at a third site based on the reports that I had seen. Well, again, just more good news. This is just a day for good news, apparently. No casualties, none whatsoever. Only minor damage to our three military installments. So there was a little damage. Is it going to cost the taxpayers a little money, which is unfortunate. But not a single American life lost. To our knowledge, not even a single person injured. We did exactly what we were supposed to do. Now, here's the thing. And this is where we get into analysis, and a lot of the things that I said yesterday turned out to be wrong, and I said at the time, a lot of this is speculation, and I'm just kind of going based on what I know. Now we know a little bit more, so I can give you a little bit more accurate description. This was not luck. And what's interesting about this is the fact that there were military bases hit, but nobody was injured. That's not a coincidence. So here's what's going on. This was an intentional miss. And the way that you know that it's an intentional miss is because the way that they used the missiles and the missiles that they chose to use in this attack were clearly not ones that were designed to cause lots of damage and kill Americans. And the way that you know that is the kind of missiles that they were using were the equivalent of an American Scud missile. They're not called Scud missiles, and the technology's a little different. I don't really understand all the inner workings of missiles. I'm not a engineer. But essentially, based on the analysis that I read, they are the equivalent of a Scud missile. Now, it doesn't have a sophisticated guidance system, and based on the missiles that blew up, apparently they weren't even fully armed. A whole bunch of the missiles that hit, they hit and they caused an impact, but they didn't blow up. They were duds. So that's also really interesting. But incredibly inaccurate. Nothing really hit the mark that they were supposed to. And I was actually arguing with friends about this last night. And again, it was in that phase where we were kind of trying to piece together information and didn't really have all of it. I genuinely thought that it was just because Iran's technology is just that bad until I did a little research, and it turns out my friends, specifically Andrew, on this, who I was talking back and forth, so if you're watching, hey Andrew, glad you're here. My buddy Andrew was actually right, because Iran does have the technology similar to a cruise missile, which are incredibly accurate and deadly. And the way that you know this is Iran has bombed Saudi Arabia's oil fields before. And when they did so, they used a cruise missile. And if you look at the trajectory, you look at where the missile landed in the Saudi oil fields, every single one dead center right on. Now, Iran does not have intercontinental missile capabilities yet, and their missiles are not nearly as sophisticated as ours. They're not hypersonic, for example, but the point is Saudi Arabia, which remember is further away from Iraq, is harder to hit from where these missiles were being launched. They hit those dead on. And yet these military bases, which are just across their border, somehow they launched the missiles and a whole bunch of them weren't even fully armed and they didn't really hit anything. That's not a coincidence. This was an intentional miss. And the reason behind that is, as crazy as the Iranians are, as radical as they are, and as Islamic fundamentalists as they are, they do still want to survive. And the whole point of this thing, the reason that we had this airstrike to kill Soleimani, is that an American life was lost. And when that happened, they realized, oh, yeah. That's not the way this worked under the old administration. We might have a couple of Americans die and they would just kind of piddle around and blame it on a video and just go their own way and you guys would fight over there about it. There wouldn't be any repercussions. They tried exactly the same thing with the Baghdad embassy and that did not pan out the way Benghazi did. So what a difference in administration change makes. And keep in mind that the Secretary of State at the time was Hillary Clinton. So if we had Hillary Clinton, you can bet the response would have been pretty much exactly the same as it was under the Obama administration. The Iranians apparently found out very quickly that if you kill an American, then that is not going to end well for them. And this is why Soleimani was killed. He was the one that orchestrated that attack in Baghdad. We have knowledge that he was planning other attacks. And so they realized that they weren't even going to take a chance on actually killing an American because they were afraid of the response. And that's the reason that this happened. It's kind of like a little guy. Let's use the analogy of a school ground fracas or, you know, some kind of conflict there. So there's a little guy that has little man syndrome and he really doesn't like one of the really big athletic kids. And so in the past, he's been able to get away with just kind of hitting and running and just giving him a quick pop on the mouth and then running off and then nothing happens to him. Well, there's another new big kid on the playground and he goes up and he thinks he's going to do exactly the same thing, runs up, pops him on the chin and then runs off. And then the big kid comes around and just whacks him in the face and knocks him to the ground. That's what just happened. He assumed that he was going to get away with it because he's gotten away with it in the past. And there was a very clear message sent that, oh, no, you don't, and you better not do it again. Now, the big kid left it at that. He just whacked him around and then got ready to move off. Here's what happened after that, and this is the best way I can characterize the missile response. It's kind of like that little kid stood up and said, okay, look, big kid, I'm really, really sorry, but I also don't want to look like a wimp because I'm afraid the other guys are going to pick on me and my girlfriend's over there and she doesn't, I don't want her to think that I just wussed out. So could you just let me like punch you one more time? I won't hit hard. We'll fake the punch. Just kind of twist your chin a little bit. And if I do that, will you leave me alone? And the big kid's like, all right, because it's not going to hurt him. He knows it's not going to hurt his reputation. So he just says, okay. That's essentially what happened the other day, is that Iran wanted to throw a fake punch so that they could look tough on the playground and not lose street cred. But at the same time, they didn't want to actually hit that kid again because they saw what happened the last time they did that, and they did not want a repeat of that. You can guarantee that right now, the replacement for Soleimani and the supreme leader of Iran are quaking in their boots. Because for all their bluster, for all their big talk about death to America and everything else, and they do believe it. I'm not saying that they don't really believe it. I'm just saying that they also do have survival instincts and they don't want a repeat of that. And so that's what you saw happen. That's the episode that you just saw play out on the international stage. And I have to say to President Trump, and Lord knows I've been critical of the man before, and you know, that's part of my job, and also I just call people out when I think they make a mistake. Not only did Donald Trump have the right cards to play, he clearly had the right cards in his hand. He had prepared for this. Not only did he have the right hand, he played it the correct way. This is the best possible outcome that I could think of. I did not expect this. It took me by surprise how well this worked out. This was the best possible outcome to this because everybody was speculating and I wasn't in panic mode about World War III or anything, but I was concerned, and you can tell from my video yesterday, I was thinking, oh, this might end really badly for us. Because I had a feeling what was going to happen is that was escalation on their part, then we were going to escalate it again, and you were going to have this back and forth until something really serious happened. Well, it turns out the exact opposite was true. Iran was just throwing a fake punch, and it looks like President Trump is going to let them throw that fake punch, and that's all that's going to happen. Now, you have to remember that the reason that Trump did that is because he doesn't want war either. And he made that very clear in his statement today. And the Iranians, they don't want open war. They want to bide their time. They want to get nuclear weapons. They want to become a legitimate threat to America to where they could actually do some damage. And then they want to take us out. And we should not forget that that is their true intention. However, it is better for us to smack them around a little bit now, but also try to keep the peace as much as possible to keep them from getting nuclear weapons. That should be the ultimate end goal, and it seems as though that's exactly what Trump did, and if that is what he wants long term, then he played this exactly the right way. The Iranians came out, and this is from Iran cultural chief Al-Hadari, who released this via Iran's state-controlled press, because, you know, they control every form of media in that country. This is what they said. He said earlier today, "Annihilation of Israel and the U.S. is the price of blood of martyr Soleimani. The aggression should be responded to by the tough revenge stressed by the supreme leader, and all the options are on the table. U.S. bases in the region, the U.S. embassy in Baghdad, and all their soldiers within the range of the resistance missiles, because annihilation of Israel and the U.S. is the price of the blood for martyr Soleimani, and God willing, the entire region will be liberated." Now again, this goes exactly to the analysis that I just gave you. Do they really want the destruction of Israel and the destruction of the U.S.? Yes, they do. However, they know that if they try to take that fight to the U.S. or to Israel right now, they will lose and lose badly. And that's why they would rather pump up the rhetoric. They would rather, for all the people that are hardliners in their country, they'd rather pay lip service to them. They'd rather throw a fake punch so they get to look tough on the playground, but not actually do any damage, because they know if they do any damage, that big kid is going to lay them out in a way that they're not going to recover anytime soon. And so that's what really happened here. They want to talk big. They want to look tough. They want all the radicals within their borders, and there are a lot of them in Iran, to feel like they are doing something to respond to the U.S. without actually responding in a way that the U.S. is going to thump them. And that's what's going on here. It is unlikely they will do anything open, at least for a little while, but here's the thing. They do have proxies, and this is the way that Iran typically operates. This is their MO. They do have proxies, and I think that probably within the next couple weeks or a month, you're going to see some of Iran's proxies do some kind of attacks. But I think that they will tell them, hey, be careful about actually killing American lives, because that seems to be the threshold that we're not allowed to cross. Americans dying seems to be the trigger that will cause President Trump to go, yeah, you're done. And we don't want to do that. Now, here's the thing. Because Iran does operate through proxies, they use that because they want some deniability. They want to be able to say, hey, it wasn't us, when of course it was them. I mean, the same thing happened with the Baghdad attack. That's what started this whole thing. And so that's one of the reasons that they operate using proxy. But here's the thing. Because they use proxies, there is at least a chance that one of their proxies goes off half-cocked. Because that's the issue with proxies. If they're not technically under your jurisdiction, then it's a lot harder to control them. And so you may have some true believers, some religious zealots that just basically do their own thing, do whatever they want anyway. And that could be really bad for Iran. I don't know if that would take place. I'm just saying, watch out for that in the next few weeks, especially. So finally, President Trump did address the nation, and I think did actually a really fantastic job doing so today. And it amazes me that the left constantly criticizes him as trying to be a warmonger. I don't think that he's very hawkish at all, honestly. It seems to be he has a very non-interventionalist streak that is far more dove-like than even most of his Republican supporters and most of the Republicans in Congress. President Trump seems to be the kind of guy that doesn't want to get into a war, but the thing that I do appreciate about him is that he is willing to take action if that seems to take place. He doesn't take the option of war off the table, which is something that you kind of felt like with President Obama. Now, President Obama sometimes did take action, but even then it was very reticent, and you did get the feeling, and our enemies unfortunately also got the feeling, that he really didn't want war, and he was willing to take an awful lot of crap from other people without taking any action. So this is President Trump and talking about over and over again how much he desires peace. Take a listen.
Our great American forces are prepared for anything. Iran appears to be standing down, which is a good thing for all parties concerned and a very good thing for the world. No American or Iraqi lives were lost because of the precautions taken, the dispersal of forces, and an early warning system that worked very well. As we continue to evaluate options in response to Iranian aggression, the United States will immediately impose additional punishing economic sanctions on the Iranian regime. These powerful sanctions will remain until Iran changes its behavior. And we must all work together toward making a deal with Iran that makes the world a safer and more peaceful place. We must also make a deal that allows Iran to thrive and prosper and take advantage of its enormous untapped potential. Iran can be a great country. Peace and stability cannot prevail in the Middle East as long as Iran continues to foment violence, unrest, hatred, and war. The civilized world must send a clear and unified message to the Iranian regime. Your campaign of terror, murder, mayhem will not be tolerated any longer. Our missiles are big, powerful, accurate, lethal, and fast. Under construction are many hypersonic missiles. The fact that we have this great military and equipment, however, does not mean we have to use it. We do not want to use it. American strength, both military and economic, is the best deterrent.
All right, so you saw that over and over again in this speech. And remember, this was only a 10-minute speech, and he spends about 3 minutes of it. And there were even a couple clips where he talks about it that I didn't include in that montage, where he keeps talking about, look, we want peace, we don't want any more actions, we don't want to have to do this, we will if we have to, but we don't want to be involved in some kind of war over there, we don't want aggression between you and, I mean, does that sound like a warmonger to you? Again, I think that he's actually very much more dove-like than a lot of the Republicans on his side. I understand that on the Republican side, you have some people that are super, super trigger happy. I mean, all you had to do was watch Fox News last night, and it was person after person after person suggesting that we need to amp up the heat, we need to make a strike and make a big statement, and President Trump not only didn't do that through his actions, but he also came out today and said, no, basically that's all, we're done. And as long as Iran doesn't do something else like this, then, you know, we'll be good. Trump is just by his nature an anti-interventionalist. But the thing that I do appreciate about him, and when looking at this, you can tell he's saying, yeah, we have the equipment, we have the resources, we could destroy you if we wanted to. We're not going to do that as long as you don't give us a reason to. That's the right message. Again, I have a lot of criticism for President Trump on a lot of things. And one thing that is amazing is that looking at the poll numbers, dealing with international issues, dealing with other countries is one of the things that people feel that President Trump is the worst at, that he's doing the worst job at. But actually, that's one of the few areas that he and I seem to be pretty much on the same page on. And I think that he handled it extremely well. Now, I think that part of that, and this is a good policy to adopt, this is one that I'm pretty much in agreement with President Trump on, is that he has a red line in the sand that people will not cross. And they cross that line this time, and he details that. He doesn't use those words exactly, but listen to what he says here in clip two.
In recent days, he was planning new attacks on American targets, but we stopped him. Soleimani's hands were drenched in both American and Iranian blood. He should have been terminated long ago. By removing Soleimani, we have sent a powerful message to terrorists. If you value your own life, you will not threaten the lives of our people.
See, now that is a good red line. Because what he's saying is, you hurt an American, you take an American life, we're coming after you. And basically, I love the way that he characterized, he goes on more about Soleimani and the reasons that we took him out. But that's all it boiled down to is Soleimani is a person that was known for killing Americans. He was not going to stop. He was not going to moderate. He was going to continue to try to kill as many Americans as possible. And that's why we had to take him out. We didn't want to take him out. That wasn't, you know, something that we just had a burning desire to do. But when you hurt an American, when you take an American life, we're coming after you. And by the way, that is something, and Donald Trump is not a man known for his consistency, but he has been consistent on this. They shoot down a drone, we're not going to do anything. They take out some of our equipment, we're not going to do anything. They kill an American, something's going to happen. Somebody's going to die for that. I think that's a fair line to have. Yeah, it sucks that the drone was expensive and it's going to cost us a lot of money. And yeah, it sucks that some of our assets get damaged every once in a while. You take an American life, hellfire is coming down from the sky on you. And as long as he keeps that line and as long as that becomes the trigger, I think I personally feel a lot safer. I mean, I know I'm not over there. But as an American citizen, I feel a lot safer with that being the red line because he's saying, you screw with our people, you take our people's life, you should be afraid. That's word for word almost. It's a paraphrase, but that's what he said, is that if everybody that wants to hurt one of our people, that should be a strong message, don't mess with us. I think that's exactly the right tone. It makes him look tough, but also doesn't make him look like a warmonger that just wants to invade countries and nation build. And I don't think that that is what the president wants. I think it was the perfect balance. He did an excellent job with that. Now, I've been very praiseworthy of this. This is the one area I do have a little criticism, and I don't know for a fact that it's worth criticizing. It's just, it gives me pause, and it worries me a little bit. Here's the last clip where he's talking about working with Iran.
3 months ago, after destroying 100% of ISIS and its territorial caliphate, we killed the savage leader of ISIS, al-Baghdadi. Tens of thousands of ISIS fighters have been killed or captured during my administration. ISIS is a natural enemy of Iran. The destruction of ISIS is good for Iran, and we should work together on this and other shared priorities.
I love that freeze frame at the end where Trump's just like, seriously, somebody needs to caption that. But anyway, that silliness out of the way. The thing that does concern me about that is we have a really bad history of Americans working with the lesser of two evils, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. That doesn't work, especially not in the Middle East. What has happened to us in the Middle East time and time again is that we sided with the lesser of two evils to be able to do what we needed to do. Keep in mind that the reason that ISIS exists in the first place, which is now the big enemy that Trump is saying we want to partner with Iran to take ISIS out. Now, it is true that ISIS being gone is good for Iran. He's not incorrect on that. That is a fair analysis. But saying, and we want to work with ISIS, we want to work with them to get rid of it. Now, maybe giving him the most grace, the most benefit of the doubt, he's still talking in that hypothetical that he was earlier. If Iran stops all their crazy behavior, if they start becoming a part of the international community, they stop funding terrorism, maybe he's still operating under that and saying, if that happens, then we could work with Iran. Well, yeah, if that happens, I'd be fine with working with Iran, maybe several years after they have shown a consistent record of not funding terrorism, of wanting to de-radicalize and moderate. So far, there's been absolutely zero indication that they want to do that. However, the reason that I'm very concerned with that is that America has a track record of siding with one side over the other. This happened in Libya. This happened with Muammar Gaddafi. This happened with ISIS. Remember, the reason that ISIS exists is because we trained and armed a whole bunch of Iraqi rebels, and then they turned on us. ISIS was largely supplied by and trained by American assets in there that were trying to train the Iraqi army, and a whole bunch of them defected and wound up joining the Islamic State. The problem with the Middle East, and this is something that unfortunately I don't think any president has fully understood, and maybe Trump does, and it seems like he gets it a little better than some of the other ones, there are no good guys. None. There No, I really can't think of any good guys. There is bad and there is more bad, but so far siding with the less bad only means that they become the big bad later. This is a really, really bad situation for us. And it is part of the reason that I think that Americans are so anxious to get out of this quagmire. Because it doesn't matter who we side with, who we arm, who we say, okay, these are the good guys, these are the ones that we can trust. No, they're all bad. They're all bad actors. The vast majority of the Middle East, I'm not saying there are no good people. I mean, for goodness sake, I'm one of the people that gave money to try to get the Christians and Jews out of there during the Syrian civil war. I do believe that there are good people over there. I'm saying that there is every military force of any significance or consequence in the Middle East so far has been bad. And siding with any of them has wound up biting us in the butt every single time so far. And that's the reason that I'm saying this idea that, well, maybe we can team up with Iran to try to take out the more pressing problem, which is ISIS right now. Frankly, I think that Iran is more of a threat, which is part of the reason I disagree with that strategy. But more importantly, I don't see that working out well for us. I don't think that it would behoove us to try to take out ISIS with Iran's help, nor would it behoove us to switch sides and team up with ISIS to harm Iran. This is just, there are no winning strategies with that. And that's why, even though I think overall this was a really good speech, I think that Donald Trump handled the situation about as well as any human being could have, and I'm giving him very high praise on that. This is the one part of the speech that I do kind of take issue with. And I hope that that was not indicative of a larger policy that we're going to be implementing. I don't think that it is. I think the president was speaking in hypotheticals, but it's something to keep an eye out for. All right, well, thank you so much for your time. Hopefully I've said something that has enlightened you on this and not just confused you, because it is a lot to take in and it's been a really busy news day. But I got to get to Bible study. I'm sure that most of you do as well. So stay the course, friends.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.